Though he couldn't properly keep track of time, he was aware of its passage and marked it by the images that Martha sent to him, as if she was trying to keep him informed of progress. Progress. Towards what end, he wondered. His death, most likely. There was strength in Martha that hadn't been there before they'd landed in the Behemoth sludge, and she fed it into him somehow. Presumably it was connected with the stabbing pains at the base of his neck and spine. He tried not to think too hard about the source of the nutrition, but he did know he was no longer half as hungry or thirsty. Max hadn't expected to be so calm. He could feel everything, the buffeting of the wind on the feces in which they hid, the gentle massaging of his body to ease away fatigue in his muscles, the touch of Martha's mind on the periphery of his own, persistent but not intrusive, the vague anxiety that she tried to soothe away with images of calm, and the curious sense of inner peace that came over him whenever he was awake. Max had the impression it was dark outside. He was tired, but that was hardly a surprise. He had a headache too. It had been nagging at him since he awoke a while ago, and it was slowly but surely growing in intensity. And now he came to examine himself, his extremities were cold too, almost numb. Max took in a breath and opened his eyes. Like before, it was dark. The hood Martha had encased him in was opaque. He could see shapes beyond it, like the afterimages of a flash photo straight in the eyes, but he couldn't make them out. That aside, if this was the fool, then it didn't measure up to the rumours and scaremongering. Frankly, Risa taking heaters was worse than anything he was suffering now, despite the brief early pain in his back and neck and the disturbing imagery he was seeing. So, perhaps it wasn't the fall. Perhaps this was just the consequences of the latest upgrade. He certainly didn't feel changed. He didn't feel different, or better, or worse, or as if his brain was wired up in a new way. "It's even quite comfortable in here," said Max, "if a little dull at times." "Brace." The word sat in his head, clear as Drake's sight, the voice familiar, the tone a warning. "Strength." It echoed away into what Valera would have been delighted to call the caverns of his unoccupied mind. "Martha, is that you?" Warmth washed over him. "Oh." Max wasn't sure what to think. All he did know was that his anxiety spiked, and not even Martha's care could stop the sweats, the palpitations, and the shivering. "Why strength? And what's this about bracing myself?" "Pain." "I can take some pain," said Max, feeling nowhere near as brave as he hoped he was sounding. "Much." Everything that the voice said was accompanied by imagery across his eyelids. A mouth open and screaming, fists clenched, and a contorted face, eyes open and begging for mercy. All very comforting. "When do we start?" "Now." For the first time in his life, Max found that he was scared of dying. He opened his mouth to beg her to reconsider, but before he could frame the words, it began. It was impossible to say how many times his body was pierced. His back took the brunt, but the stabbing pains were in his arms, legs, buttocks, chest and neck too. He'd have likened it to walking into a hail of metal shards, but it was far, far worse than that. Every single point of entry was slow, deliberate and deep, as if Martha's primary intention was torture. Max would have writhed with the agony, but her pouch muscles had firmed to steel, and from scalp to heel he had no movement whatsoever. He could just about move his toes, and he did so vigorously, if only to convince himself he was still alive. The cold that came with the piercings was shocking, leaving him gasping for air, what little he could drag in with his torso mostly immobilized. Crawling tendrils issued from every sharp point, some of which felt like needles, and others more like stilettos. He could trace some of them as they invaded his body, note them creeping to his heart, his lungs, and into his abdominal cavity where they spread like clawing, freezing hands, gripping hard and beginning to squeeze. Max screamed, the sound emerging like tortured whispers. toes. Toes, think about your toes. See how they still move, and you can still move them. Holy God, fuck. Toes, toes. She doesn't want to kill you. She needs you. If she wanted to kill you, you'd be dead already, so you're all right. Am I fuck all right? What is she doing? How should I know? It must be the alien part. Maybe I'm being improved, or maybe harvested, or some other such shit. Fuck me sideways. I need this to stop. I need this to stop. Please, Holy Father, let it stop. Let it stop. Max's head was hot. Blood was thundering around inside his skull, looking for a way out. It was washing against the insides of his skull, pressing onto his brain from the outside and swelling it from the inside. Any moment he expected blood to shoot from his eyes, nose, mouth, ears, anywhere to relieve the pressure. He tried to open his eyes to let the blood out, but his eyelids wouldn't respond. Instead, they showed him cascades of red with tumbling dark shadows within, all blown on a flame so hot it could turn bone to ash in a moment. He was nothing but a pile of ash supported by the pouch muscles. As soon as Martha let go, he'd crumble and be dust on the wind. Every nerve was raw and screaming. Every tooth was being wrenched out by the root. Every toe and fingernail ripped from its birth. Every piece of his skin stripped layer by layer. Millions of pairs of miniature claws grabbing with precision to peel him away, one molecule at a time. He had no control of his mouth, or he'd have opened it to scream. He made the sound within him instead, an endless hum dragged from lungs exhausted of air and collapsing while the noise went on and on. Holy God, what now? Inside his body, his muscles started to spasm. It began in his arms, a quivering sensation combining horribly with the cold and the piercings, spreading like an all-consuming virus to the rest of his body. He ground his teeth together while he tried to shake himself apart inside his skin. Every pierce point ricocheted with new pain. Please! He forced out, through a mouth caught in the net of palsy that ran through every muscle in his face. Please! Visions of the open sky wiped across his mind. Vivid blues and whites, followed by slate grey and star-strewn black. They were glorious vistas of freedom and domain, and he yearned to be there in the limitless space. Inside his cocoon, he almost smiled, but a shattering torment scythed into his brain, and all he could see as he tumbled down, unable to resist any more, was a blazing white. Gerhard Müller ran into the ERC labs in the footsteps of Markov, and a satisfying few meters ahead of Kirby. Childish, given the serious situation they could be in, but what the hell? He was still stung by the attitudes of both his colleagues towards his pilots, and shocked by Markov's belief that Drake pilots were mere tools to advance her knowledge. But she was still UE's most brilliant scientist, so when she wanted to run, you ran.
"Get me Eleanor,"
Markov ordered the nearest tech beyond the doors. She didn't break stride as she made for one of the analysis rooms.
"And fire up Electron 1 and the DNA identware. I need a match almost before I've placed the sample." "I'm on it, Helena."
The tech scurried away. Markov walked quickly into the room and fetched a glass holder for the spyfly. She opened it and nodded to Müller, who dropped the remains inside. Markov examined it briefly, before snapping the lid shut and dropping it into Electron 1's receptor. She sat in the operator's chair and tapped up some feeds. Data, graphs, and images popped up. The spyfly rotated slowly.
"Helena, eh?"
said Müller. Markov shrugged.
"Hierarchy is the bane of teamwork. We leave that to you lot, and a right cock-up you make of it too."
She leaned back in her chair, Müller and Kirby coming to either side of her and leaning in, hands on the desk like a cliched corporate shot.
"What are we looking at here?" asked Kirby. "Barring the subject, of course."
Markov indicated the various charts and data flows in turn.
"Spectrographic analyses. Compound ratios, radio frequency range and function. Memory analysis and DNA composition. This definitely isn't one of ours."
"Helena?"
Markov turned a beaming smile on Rosenbach, who had entered the room looking harassed and unhappy.
"Ah, Eleanor. Got a spyfly here. I need to know any time the smart screens in the flight deck, on the turrets, launchers, hydroponics, solar arrays, glitched even momentarily while you've been prioritizing systems in the last 3 days."
Rosenbach nodded.
Where did you find this?
Bridge Bar, said Kirby.
Wow. Got a long way, then.
Quite, said Markov. How long do you need?
Just a few minutes. I'll need to scribble a quick capture algorithm. I'll ping you the report as soon as.
Perfect. What's wrong, by the way?
Let's just say the sandstorm needs to be kind, but I've just seen the wind speed and duration forecast and the projected volume of grit that'll hit us, and, well, we're likely to have some issues.
With what? Asked Muller.
Pretty much everything concerned with our defensive capabilities.
Rosenbach flicked out her peep-arm and sat in a chair away from the rest of them.
More in a minute. Let me just get this seeker on its way.
How long have we got to wait for the bad news? Asked Kirby.
Collating now, said Markov.
She entered a few values into the screen.
Okay, okay. Oh, dear.
What am I looking at?
Asked Muller, feeling his heart sink. The analysis screen was covered in lines of data, plus three graphs and a graphic of the reconstituted spyfly. There were some red figures, but some green ones too. He didn't know why that comforted him, and the look on Markov's face suggested it shouldn't. Markov pointed at this and that on the screen as she spoke.
It's a grade one Maputo spyfly, which suggests they have resource to burn as opposed to being on their last legs, so to speak. It was geared for electromagnetic, physiological, and audio data, and has probably transmitted whatever data it collected already. Worst, it's 3 days old. Even if it took a day to get here, it's collected a massive amount of data.
Can you download its memory?
It's an in-out feed with a volatile buffer. Nothing stays in there for long. Our only hope is of interference. Then the maps would lose the data in transmission.
We need to know what it might have leaked, said Kirby.
Knowing where it came in will at least let us plot likely routes, said Markov. But 3 days? Wow. Frankly, our darkest secrets could have been exposed.
Said Rosenbach, and she had their immediate attention.
It might be worse than that. 3 days ago, our screening would have blocked it, so how on earth did it get in?
Halloran probably opened his great big mouth and swallowed it, said Kirby. What?
Rosenbach was staring at him.
Hitched a ride?
You've lost me, said Kirby.
I need to check something, Helena. Okay if I head off?
What is it?
I'm just wondering if it hitched a ride on one of the Drake carcasses we brought back on board.
Markov nodded.
Good thought. Go ahead.
Rosenbach hurried out of the room. Muller turned back to Kirby.
Not sure it really matters how the damn thing got in here. Avery needs to know we've been compromised.
Kirby nodded.
Yeah, I'll ping her now. She'll want us round the tack tables for a worst-case scenario brainstorm. See you in command and control. I've got to sort something first. No problem.
I'll ping you with any useful data, said Markov. Don't expect too much good news.
These days, good news feels like propaganda, said Kirby.
Talk to you later.
There was never a time when forward recon was anything other than the biggest craphole duty for any squad. First to see Drake fire close up before it toasted your ass. First to get targeted by enemy ground units and harried by fucking basilisks if you were unlucky enough to get caught off Lizard. And first to see a behemoth 40mm muzzle flash.
Good of Avery to commit significant forces to the mission,
muttered Horvald, the gecko jockey. His voice over the comm was muffled by the sensory mask, and because his face was stuffed into the back of the gecko's neck.
Perhaps she didn't feel like sacrificing anyone crucial,
said Ganeef, her voice whining and unhappy.
Less moaning, said Meyer. Job's the job, and the exterminators never shirk, never complain. Just kick the shit out of whatever we find.
There were days Meyer wished he was a private, not a captain. He only got to moan to himself. And to be fair, this duty was worth moaning about. The gecko moved south in low profile across the undulating dunes, while the sandstorm blasted all around them. Despite the buffeting, Horvald was keeping the ride relatively smooth and at a decent pace. Exterminators, 2 platoon, rode 5 across each flank of the gecko, strapped into bio-engineered outward-facing seats formed of bone, a layer of fat and rough skin. Horvald lay flat in a body socket engineered into the gecko's back, his senses directly connected to the gecko's. His hands were in sheaths on each side of its neck, allowing him to direct its movement and limited weapon suite. His mind was far more powerful than the dull beast's and directed its speed, sensory focus and direction. The gecko was an augmented version of the common little lizard, unlike the 100% alien Drake. Not for Horvald, then, the inevitable slide towards the fall, but on the other hand, lying face down in slime for a job was just fucking sick. Maya growled. Fucking Halloran. He was the reason they were out here now, not tucked up in bed while the heart headed for some downtime after tearing the hide off the Maputo. Maya stared down into his lap, trying to ignore the maddening, intensifying itching. He scratched ineffectually at his crotch, his fingers feeling like sausages in his gloves. He was sweating in his combats, his head slick under his sand hood and his goggles steamed up. Sand rattled in his mask filter and against his helmet. It blew in waves across his body, seeking out the most uncomfortable places in which to nestle. It was torture. Fucking Halloran. Maya growled again. He should have let the Mips catch the bastard when he ran through the exterminator rack the other morning. That was a moment of mercy never to be repeated. Then he could have done his fall in landfill with all the other porridge brains. But here they were, heading out into the desert to set up thermal imagery and radar on a 15-click spread 100 clicks south and west of the hog's position. Not that they'd spot Dick all in this mess. The hog's radar and motion sensors were just so much fuzz at the moment, so the panic inspired by the spy fly incursion had led Avery and the exec to send platoons out to all points of the compass to set up an early warning grid for the moment the storm lifted. Total pisser.
"Think the maps'll move in this soup?"
asked Sidhu.
"Why would they?"
said Maya. The wind howled across the gecko, which shifted a little to the right to compensate.
"On the other hand, if I heard how creaky the hog was, I might take a risk. Reckon it'll be remote artillery and booby traps, if anything,"
said Reynolds.
"I'm with Reynolds,"
said Kopetich in her Slavic roll.
"Reluctant though I am to admit it, he's probably on the money this time,"
said Maya.
"That's 'cause I'm a thinker, a tactician," said Reynolds. "Primed for great things." "Hey, Reynolds, is tactician a synonym for twat?"
asked Sidhu. There was a brief silence.
"You might have to define synonym, Sid,"
said Kopetich.
"Fuck the lot of you," said Reynolds. "Call yourself a buddy, Sid."
Ribald laughter bounced across the comm. A dense gust of sand rattled against Meyer's goggles and hissed around his hood. He looked out into the pitch darkness, glad that the gecko had inner transparent eyelids and a rudimentary night vision, not to mention extremely sensitive heel pads that tested the ground with every step.
"Yeah, but do you know what a synonym is?"
drawled McCarthy, a heavy Northern Irish accent lacing his words.
"It's the name of the fist that knocks out your teeth,"
said Reynolds.
"That was close to a smart retort,"
said Sidhu.
"You might have to define rit..."
"Don't make me come over there," said Reynolds.
"Now that would be a thing to see,"
said Ganeef.
20 says he's blown off our ride inside 5 seconds.
"Okay, kids, let's focus,"
said Maya, cutting across Reynolds' next words.
"Horvo, what's our position?"
Horvald clicked his tongue.
"You're coming up on position 1 in about 3 minutes, boss."
"You heard our tour guide. Get prepped. Boots on the ground the moment we stop. Sidhu, Reynolds, you've got the lookout gig, so fire up your thermals for distance. Squad 2, set up the radar relays. Squad 1, we're on thermal imagery. Visibility is almost zero, so all of you stay close, take a bead on the gecko, and use the heat pads on her flanks to find your way back if you get detached. Any questions?"
They rode on in silence for the final few hundred meters. The gecko slowed and stopped, and immediately turned its head downwind, though the swirling storm and the sand clogging the air made that almost pointless. Maya unclipped and jumped to the ground, flicking on thermal images and seeing the heat signatures of his platoon glow and then settle. The gecko was picked out as a solid, comforting line of pale yellow.
"We've got 5 of these sites to assemble, so let's not dawdle."
Squad members hurried to the storage bins strapped to the lizard's rear flanks, pulling out canvas bags full of kit and weapons that were quickly and efficiently distributed around the platoon. Maya turned a 360, acutely aware that in the pitch-black, sand-filled night, no one was coming to help them if they got in trouble. He set his shoulders and walked to the first setup point.
"Sid, Reynolds, you set?"
"In position, sir," said Sidhu. "Nothing on forward scope."
"Copy that. All right, let's get planting. I want us back on the Gecko in 10, max."
45 minutes later, the inadequacy of their kit was clear. Maya stood over the thermal imaging equipment and cursed Halloran again. A gust of wind rocked him, blowing more sand across the gear. It would not stand. It wouldn't even lie down. There wasn't enough weight to keep it stable. The windbreaks had torn, fallen down or blown away, and the shifting sand beneath it undermined it still further.
"Wind speeds topping 130 in the gusts, boss,"
said Horvald from his suddenly attractive position lying sheltered on his gecko.
"Remind me how long it's going to blow?" asked Maya.
"When we left, best case was 12 hours, replied Horvald.
"Got a bead on the hog?"
"You're joking. No satellite access, no line of sight."
Maya called a halt to efforts for the moment. It was surreal. He could only see his people as shifting heat signatures, making this more like some VR nightmare than an infantry recon duty. Beyond the scope of his platoon's position, there was nothing to see, whatever. An unending darkness blown so hard, it would have changed the landscape come daylight. And right in the middle of it all, cut off from the welcoming bulk of the Heart of Granite, exterminator platoons were trying to throw a security net around their mothership. Maya sighed. There was sand inside his combats, in his mouth, sand fucking everywhere, and the original plan was plainly unworkable, and the backup was going to mean a whole lot more sand.
"All right, kids, this is where we really earn the pittance they pay us. 10 of us, 5 sets of kit, that's 2 to a set, and we're going to have to stay out here and physically hold them all upright. Horvald, once we've dropped everyone off, I need you to patrol the zone. Comms are going to be flaky, so if you hear anything from anyone, relay it. Don't assume it's already platoon-wide. Everyone buddy up and get back on the Gecko. All but Sid and Reynolds. You can stay here. One last thing, I'm not losing anyone, so don't go wandering off from your position. Any questions?"
"Can I trade in my mission bonus for a crack at bloody Halloran?"
asked Ganeef. Maya chuckled.
"Get in line, Neef. Come on, saddle up. The night can only last so long, right?"
Chapter 33. When we look back on the Heart of Granite's life, will we celebrate the many victories, lament those lost in combat, and hold her up as a worthy flag carrier? Or will her history be forever tainted by the Halloran incident? I fear the media have already made up their minds. Nicola Avery, Commander, Heart of Granite.
"How long have we been out here?" asked Sidhu.
"Hours," said Reynolds.
"Right. Glad I asked, because I really wasn't sure. Can you be more specific?"
"Something wrong with your mission timer?"
"No, I just wanted to hear your voice."
Both men were lying down flat, with their fists clamped around the imager's legs, trying to keep them steady. They'd changed position a dozen times already, as cramp, sand, and the wind caused varying levels of discomfort. There was a sense of worth in it, though, thought Sidhu. The screens on both the radar and thermal imager remained happily devoid of the signs of enemy advancement. While that might have been because the storm blocked everything out, it was marginally more likely to be because there was nothing out there.
"I need to take a shit," said Reynolds.
"You smell like you already took it."
"Funny."
"No, really. Not even the filters and gale force winds can wholly mask the odors you're pumping out."
"Really?"
Of course not, idiot. So go squat. Just not so far away you get lost, or so close I can see the steam rising.
Reynolds stood up and brushed himself down, pointlessly. He braced himself against the storm, and at least had the sense to move off downwind.
"Keep the TI upright, will you?"
said Reynolds, his voice cracking in the gale.
"I'm sure I can temporarily spare a limb."
Seydoux rolled over and sat up in between the two pieces of woefully unstable equipment, feeling the full force of the wind beat around his head. He set a firm hand on the top of each. From the darkness, Reynolds cleared his throat.
"Hey, dump boy, go off comm. I don't need to hear your straining."
"Copy that."
The comm went quiet, and Seydoux took a long and relaxing breath. He focused on the roaring and whistling of the wind, the thrash of sand on his helmet and goggles, and the forces across his body. It was amazing. He didn't want the night to end. He was cold, sore, and tired, but, holy father, he was alive out here at the mercy of nature. Unlike their miserable, parasitic existence inside the hog. Seydoux's comm crackled.
"Comm check, Delta."
The voice was faint, swam in and out a bit, but it was good enough.
"This is Meyer at Station 3. Sound off in turn."
"Seydoux, Station 1. You're a bit quiet, but you're there."
"Copy, Sid. Station 2, come in."
"Station 2, Gneef hearing you, L and C."
"Copy, Gneef. Station 4, you out there?"
asked Meyer. The comm washed and hissed in Seydoux's ear.
"Copy, Patel. Hearing you, L and C 2. Station 5, let's hear you."
More static.
"You're really soft, Kapetich. You need to boost. Now, listen up. Horvald is on tour, currently between 3 and 2 and heading your way, Sid. When he gets to you, take 5 in the lee and get some fluids and solids in."
Seydoux laughed.
"Sorry, boss, couldn't help it. Schoolboy humor."
"What, exactly?"
"Just that Reynolds is downwind making room, so to speak. Well, I hope he's finished before the Maputo steps on his sandy ass. Sunrise in 3 hours and 10 minutes, technically. But don't get your hopes up."
"When are we going home, boss?"
asked Gneef.
"When the wind drops enough for us to weigh the kit down. Simple, eh?"
Seydoux's radar came alive. Pulsing, glowing points of green light. 6, at least. No. 8.
"Shit," he said. "I have incoming on a bearing of 197. Multiple contacts. I'm counting 8 so far. Distance, 3 clicks and closing at speed. Basilisks. Basilisks on the ground."
"Copy, Sid. Hold position, low profile. Station 2, can you confirm?"
"Negative, Captain,"
said McCarthy, who was partnering Gneef.
"I'll ping as soon as we get a contact."
"That goes for all stations,"
said Meyer.
"Horvald, best speed to Station 1 and stand by to extract. Go in dark, weapons free."
"Copy, Captain," said Horvald. "I'll be coming up on your 6, Sid. Hang tight."
"Don't be too quick," said Sid. "I fancy nailing some big game. Just polishing the carbine now."
"That better not be a euphemism,"
said Gneef, her comm crackling badly.
"Come over here and find out," said Sid.
"Stow the shit, Sid,"
said Meyer.
"Status update."
Seydoux hadn't taken his eyes off the radar. The basilisks were at 2 clicks and moving in a tight 2-column formation, presumably suffering the same contact issues.
"Still heading in like they've got sand-piercing headlights on, at 2K and closing."
"Copy that, Sid," said Meyer. "Keep on open comm. Are you jamming reciprocals?"
"Technically,"
said Seydoux, seeing the enable light blinking comfortingly.
"Mother only knows if it's actually working. Stand by."
Seydoux frowned and looked at the radar. Still the TI screen showed nothing, meaning the basilisks were running dark. Their formation was shifting. It was so hard to be sure on this ancient piece of kit, but if he was reading it right...
"We're acquired. Station 2, you should have them in a few moments. I've got to go and get Reynolds."
"Copy, Sid,"
said Meyer.
"Horvald, step on it. All stations, eyes and ears, we have incoming on Station 1. Hold your positions. You're too far away to help anyway. Be careful, Sid.
You know me, Chief,
said Sidhu, already moving in Reynolds' direction and bringing his rifle bag from his back to across his chest.
Well, quite, said Meyer. All stations, weapons free. Let's be ready.
Sidhu switched to his private comm.
Reynolds, do you copy?
Nothing but static.
Idiot.
At least Reynolds wasn't far. His heat signature swam into view after a few paces. He was still squatting.
Holy mother, that must be some dump, said Sidhu. Or serious constipation.
Sidhu laughed into his breathing mask at the image of Reynolds straining away while the basilisks closed in, probably by scent. He had his rifle out and pushed the bag back over his shoulder. The Shavec SA GL8 assault rifle had a 60-round clip, quick slap drop and reload, and an 8-pill micro-grenade launcher under the barrel. Bullets were armor-piercing, and the grenades were AP fragmentation types. Very nasty, and just the ticket for hunting math lizards. Shame the opposition had much the same kit, really. Sidhu shook his head and forced himself to focus. The basilisks would be on them in a couple of minutes. He and Reynolds needed to clear out past their sensor equipment and hope to blend into the storm noise if they could. Big if. He moved up fast, running around so he was approaching Reynolds from the front. 3 paces from Reynolds, the squatting man leapt up and began to scramble backwards. Sidhu's comm sprang to life.
Contact! Contact! Yelled Reynolds. Fuck me, it's come from nowhere! Do you copy, Sid?
Yeah, buddy, it's me. Calm down.
Sidhu moved after Reynolds, stepping over the cooling signature of his mess.
Pull your strides up, get your Shavec handy and do it fast. We've got basilisks.
Fuck! Spat Reynolds. You scared the shit out of me.
Someone had to hurry you up.
Sidhu ran round behind Reynolds while he fumbled with his trousers.
I'll sort your gun. You did grease and seal it, didn't you?
No, I dipped it in cement before we left.
Touchy?
Sidhu pulled the rifle clear and gave it a cursory check. It felt as if the trigger and grenade mechanisms were well gunked, and the bioplastic casing around the magazine housing felt in reasonable nick. Not that he could be certain of much through his gloves, and anyway, no weapon could be entirely sealed against weather like this. He slapped the gun into Reynolds' midriff.
Let's go. Back to the images and beyond.
With Reynolds' hand on his shoulder, they made best pace across the shifting sands into the teeth of the gale. It was almost dreamlike. The open comm triggered.
Sidhu, Meyer, status report?
I've got Reynolds, sir, heading to Station 1 now. How far is Horvald?
With you imminently. Take a bearing on Station 2 and you'll find him.
Copy, sir.
Sidhu shivered, as if someone had walked over his grave.
Come on, Reynolds. Let's pick up the
A basilisk sprinted out of the mire of sand and night, and Sidhu only saw it at the last second. The lizard's jaws, full of needle-sharp teeth, lunged forwards, its head swinging left and right. Sidhu had time to register, but he couldn't hear a damn thing over the wind, the sand, and the helmet tight to his head. He pushed Reynolds away hard, hoping at least one of them would escape the jaws, pounding feet and thrashing tail. He dived to the ground, meaning to roll to safety, but the basilisk's head caught him flush on the back of his right shoulder and tossed him into the air, almost certainly saving his life. Over the comm, he heard Reynolds call out, then make a noise like he'd been winded. Sidhu landed on his bruised shoulder and tumbled over and over. He couldn't help but cry out before he slithered to a stop and pushed himself back to his feet, rifle still clutched in both gloved hands.
Meyer! Sidhu!
He said, over the open comm.
We've been attacked! Single basilisk! No idea where it's gone!
I've got contacts on scope, Sid,
said Gani from Station 2.
Incoming hard and spreading across our sensor arc towards you, Captain.
You understood. Sid, condition?
Sidhu checked his compass and began to head back towards Station 1, where Reynolds might be. He thumbed the launcher, and the enable light flashed under his forefinger. His shoulder hurt like buggery, but he didn't think it was broken. What he cared about now was his buddy.
Reynolds, do you copy?
The open comm was full of noise.
Incoming at one click and closing fast, said Ganeef.
I have 3 contacts on our bead. 2 more moving towards you, sir. They've either got our radar signature or can see our heat trace.
Got to be the radar, said Meyer. Kill the images, people. Retreat to rally point Alpha and regroup. Sidhu?
Can't find Reynolds, sir. He's off comm. No thermal. Still looking, sir.
On a reflex, Sidhu dropped to the ground and rolled down a shallow decline. A basilisk, presumably the same one, sprinted past, its tail whipping over his head. He saw its shape in full this time, slate grey against the dark, and picked out a little by the sand hammering against its hide. They were bastards. Single-seater killing machines the tweakers had reckoned were only good for fast recon. There it stood. 15 meters of sleek reptilian athlete, smooth-skinned and ridiculously fast.
Reynolds!
Shouted Sidhu down his private comm, just about remembering to trigger the broadcast mute, though he still had their chatter in his ear.
They're right on us, said Ganeef. McCarthy, watch our 9. I can feel them.
A reptilian barking roar fed through the comm alongside McCarthy screaming. There was gunfire, and Sidhu fancied he could see muzzle flashes through the storm.
McCarthy is down, shouted Ganeef. Fucking thing took him in half. It's gone into the night.
Focus, Neef, said Meyer. Get yourself clear.
They've beaded us, sir, said Sidhu. I've got one circling me.
Those still clear, bug out now.
Meyer's voice was incredibly calm and measured, speaking into the blackness, trying to keep them together.
Sid, Neef, you're trained for this. I'm coming to you. Horvald, pick up Sid. Get stuck in if you can. Provide the barrier.
Negative, sir. Permission to find Reynolds first,
said Sidhu, watching the basilisk sprint off into the darkness, but not believing for one second it was gone for good. He hoped it wasn't. He wanted it.
Copy, Sid. Don't you dare fucking die. That's an order. Right, Ganeef, I'm coming to you. Horvald, meet us at station 2.
Quicker if I pick you up, sir, said Horvald.
Negative. Protect Ganeef.
Sidhu tuned down the open comm, pushing his tongue against the center stud in the comm controls clipped behind his front teeth. It would reactivate when Meyer signaled him. Sidhu stayed in his fortunate dip in the sand, enjoying the relative calm as the gale blasted overhead, sending eddies and swirls of loose sand across his hiding place. He gathered himself, checked his bearing, the waypoints and indicators set out on his head-up display, and moved out at a crouch, aware the basilisk and its rider could be watching him from behind the cloak of the storm. He moved steadily on the bearing, his eyes straying to his right from where he felt any attack might come. Mercifully, he came upon Station 1 quickly, and took a quick glance at the radar screen to check the position of the enemy basilisks. The breath caught in his throat. Those basilisks weren't scouting. They were the vanguard. Something much bigger was lumbering through the storm against all sense and reason. Sidhu turned and retraced the few paces he and Reynolds had taken before the attack, flicking to open comm.
Captain Meyer, Sidhu, say you're hearing me, boss.
Easy, Sid, you're sounding stressed. What's up?
We're in trouble. I've just checked my radar. Basilisks are circling and heading back in to take us out. They're clearing a path. There's a behemoth on the way.
What? In this?
Meyer betrayed a mote of anxiety for the first time.
Neef, can you confirm?
I'm not at the station, sir. Stand by.
Even through the storm and the crackle of the comm, Sidhu felt the shock and relative silence.
It can't be anything else. Major contact, slow moving. Got to be the Maputo. No other MAF behemoth moving in this sector. The others are still way east and west, right?
Sidhu was still moving, away to his right about half a dozen paces, a still heat signature.
Damn.
Confirmed contact, sir,
came Ganeef's voice, wavering slightly.
Definitely a behemoth.
Over the open comm, Meyer was relaying the message to the rest of the platoon, ordering them to maintain their move to the rally point. He was still intent on joining Ganeef, who was exposed and vulnerable, but there was more, and it wasn't good news for any of them, though it was the right decision.
Horvald, do you copy?
Meyer was breathing heavily, running as he spoke.
Yes, sir.
Best speed to the heart of granite. Ping them the whole way. Only return when you've relayed the information.
Copy, sir,
said Horvald, his voice heavy.
Hang in there, exterminators. I'll be as quick as I can.
We're scattered, said Meyer, and we're in trouble. Let's not hide it. But we're exterminators, and we do what we do. No one gets lost. No one gets left behind.
Understood, sir,
said Sidhu, finding his heart pounding away, his body registering their dire position, though his mind was still clear.
I've got Reynolds, sir. What's his situation?
Sidhu knelt by his body.
Reynolds was still, and his heat signature was confusing, but it looked like he was still alive.
Sidhu stripped off a glove and felt for a pulse in Reynolds' neck. It was there, but it was average at best. He put an ear to Reynolds' face, pulling his helmet aside and trying to get an idea of the state of the stricken soldier's breathing. Impossible. The wind and the muffling effects of Reynolds' mask conspired against him.
He's still alive, sir, but I can't confirm injury. He's unconscious, I think. So hard to tell with the thermals. I'm switching to torchlight.
It'll be a beacon, Sid, warned Meyer. Your call.
No choice, sir, said Sidhu. Come on, Reynolds. Give me a sign here.
Sidhu switched his thermal imaging off and thumbed the studs on the side of his helmet. They had to be depressed simultaneously to switch on the quartet of bright halogen beams.
Oh, no, whispered Sidhu. Stay with me, Reynolds. Don't make a crap the last meaningful thing you did. Not a good epitaph for the headstone, buddy.
Reynolds was still alive. His eyes were open, and he was lying on his side, staring into the torch beams that Sid tried to keep from his face. Sid enabled his personal comm and jacked the volume right up. He could hear Reynolds' breathing now, ragged gasps, short and agonized. Reynolds' hands were clamped to his midriff. Somehow he'd managed to jam some sterile med packing into the wound, and he was still holding it tight, his arms shaking with the effort. Blood had soaked right through the pack and was dripping into the sand.
Captain Meyer, Sidhu, Reynolds has a serious gut injury, bleeding heavily. I have to try and stem it and stabilize him.
Copy, Sid. Do your best.
Sidhu placed his hands over Reynolds' gloves and pushed with the slightest of pressure.
Got to roll you over, Reynolds. I have to see the injury, gel it, and stabilize you for evac.
Reynolds rasped in a breath.
Been listening to the comm, he said, very softly, and between gasps. Not sure I can walk out of here.
Horvald's coming back, and I'm going nowhere. I'll keep you safe.
Top man.
It should have been my surname, buddy. Let's roll you. I won't lie to you. This is going to really, really hurt.
Reynolds coughed a laugh.
Thank you, Doctor.
Sidhu put one hand on Reynolds' shoulder, the other on his hip.
On three, he said. One, two.
He rolled the soldier onto his back, dragging a long, low growl of pain from him.
What happened to three?
Gasped Reynolds.
Never could count, said Sidhu. Okay, take your hands away, man. I need to see what I'm working with.
Sidhu reached behind him and pulled his med supplies from the long pouch on his belt. Reynolds moved his hands, and the pressure pack fell away. Whether it had been claws or teeth didn't matter, but Reynolds was slashed multiple times from the centre of his ribs to the base of his gut, and the only things keeping his intestines in were the strips of skin in between the gashes. Reynolds was silent. He knew what Sidhu was seeing, and they both knew the likely outcome.
Let's get patching.
Sidhu tore open the suture strip pack, aware that every moment more sand was blowing into the wound. He tried to shield it as best he could, but the sand was bloody everywhere. Each suture strip was 10 centimetres long and one wide, and adhered to the skin brilliantly, allowing Sidhu to fix one end and pull a part of the wound closed as far as possible before setting the other end. Fuck knew how the medics got them off. He had 10 strips, and cursed himself for not getting Reynolds' packs out too, but there was no point in worrying about it. Sidhu worked as fast as he could with the wind threatening to whip away the strips and blowing sand onto the adhesive. He worked methodically, from the outside of the wound in, trying to knit the flayed skin as best he could. But there were still going to be ugly gaps. He'd just about finished when the open comm sparked up, making both of them jump.
Basilisks incoming. One click and closing hard. I've got three contacts beating on stations 4 and 5, two heading for S3, and three more beating on S1 and S2.
It was Jen Picolet from Station 3, and the next voice was Myers, and he was furious.
How the fuck would you know, Pico? Are you still on station?
Yes, sir,
she said, voice rock steady and determined.
Someone has to relate, and I'm the only one still in comm range of everyone.
I gave you a direct order.
I'll be happy to go and report back on the hog, sir.
Maya cursed.
Your call, Pico. Leave whenever you want, but if you stay, shout the numbers. You're our eyes. Good luck. You're more batshit than Sid.
Copy, sir, said Picolet. I'll take that as a compliment.
Sid chuckled, and even Reynolds had a go at laughing, but fell to a fit of coughing instead. Sid watched the suture strips, seeing them move and settle, remaining secure. He picked up the canister of gel skin, sobering quickly with Pico's voice in his ear, telling him how close the basilisks were getting.
Sid, half a click. Ganeef, 750. Patel, Kapetich, 2 clicks.
Sidhu aimed it at the top of the wound and pushed the top stud. A foamy white substance flowed out, spreading on contact. With a few quick swipes, he'd covered the wound, and he smoothed the foam down a little, feeling it begin to solidify, providing a sterile barrier.
"How much pain med have you taken?"
he asked.
"All of it," said Reynolds. "Get your gun, Sid."
"Sid, 250 and fast. Ganeef, 600. Patel Kapetich, 1.7 and fast."
Sidhu pulled a hypo out of the kit and jabbed it into the wound at the side of the gel skin.
"Sid!" said Reynolds. Gun!
Sidhu dropped the hypo and pulled his gun round. He flicked off his beams and switched to thermals, not that it did any good except make everything a whole lot darker. He thought to move from Reynolds, but decided against it, instead moving to his other side so that he was facing Station 1, his weapon trained out over Reynolds' legs.
Stay still, said Sid. Oh, damn,
croaked Reynolds. Voice a little slurred as the pain meds kicked in hard.
And I was just dusting myself off for a run.
Shut up! I can't aim straight!
Don't burn my legs, said Reynolds.
You're on meds. You won't even notice till later.
Picolet's voice rang out again, scared now.
Sid, one on you now. Ganeef, same for you. Kapetich Patel, 1K and closing. 2 on me. Duck and weave. Oh, shit!
Picolet!
Shouted Maya.
Pico! Do you copy?
A woman screamed and gurgled. The horrible sound fed right into Sid's ears. It had to be either Picolet or Ganeef. Right in front of him, a basilisk sprinted out of the blackness, just paces away and moving straight for them. It opened its mouth. Sidhu pulled the trigger and heard 2 dull pops, micro-grenades pumping out of the underslung barrel.
Fuck, he said.
The micros flew like a dream. Little flares in the night, straight into the basilisk's open mouth. The detonations were muted, but their effect was devastating. The first blew the basilisk's neck to shreds, taking the jockey with it, electronics flashing and flaring in the mess of blood and skin and flesh scattering in all directions. The second micro destroyed the remains of the lizard's skull, sending bone fragments across the desert in an expanding sphere of razor-sharp hail. Sidhu had put his head down the moment he'd fired grenades, but it made little difference. He was aware of the basilisk's headless body plunging into the sand and ploughing right at them in the instant before the shockwave picked them both up and hurled them backwards. He felt shards of bone ripping into his combats and flailing at his helmet. One caught his goggles with a glancing blow and shattered the left lens. And then he was on the ground again, tumbling out of control before sliding to a stop. Sidhu didn't care if he was badly hurt or not. He pushed himself to his feet and ran to Reynolds, lying in the sand. He dropped to his knees by him and switched to his beams. Of course, Reynolds was dead. His body was torn up. Bone fragments were lodged in his back and helmet, and one leg had been all but torn off at the knee. At least his eyes were closed, and the meds would have dulled the pain.
"Sorry, buddy. I'm so sorry."
Sidhu pounded the ground.
"Fuck, fuck, fuck!"
He turned and sat with his back to Reynolds' crumpled body as the open comms sparked up again.
"They went straight past me," said Picolet. "Kopetic, Patel, and the others too. Ganesh is still travelling north. I think Sid took his out."
"Good to hear you, Pico,"
said Maya, still apparently charging across the sand.
"I'm closing on Ganesh. Great work, Sid."
"Reynolds is dead," said Sidhu.
"I fucked up, boss."
There was a short silence across the comm.
"Stay with him, Sid. What's the heading of the remaining basilisks?"
asked Maya, flat-voiced.
"If they carry on converging as they are, they'll all be on bearing 340.
It didn't take a genius to work out what they were after.
"Horvald! Horvald, do you copy?" asked Maya. "You have incoming! I repeat, you have incoming!"
Chapter 34. Technically, the basilisk is only a one-jock lizard. But if you really want to, you can strap yourself halfway down its back. Now that is a ride. Corporal Raj Sidhu, 2 Company, the Exterminators.
"Do I copy?"
muttered Horvald.
"Sadly, I do."
The gecko was at a dead sprint, and he could feel the lizard's anxiety in every fibre. It radiated from her in waves and filled his head with primal fear. She knew what was after her, and she knew she wasn't fast enough. Horvald triggered his open comm.
"Copy, Captain. We're at top speed and 75 short of the heart. I'm transmitting the emergency signal plus the broadcast warning every couple of minutes. Nothing yet, sir."
"They'll be on you in maybe 15 minutes, mate. How long can you hold them off?"
"We've got a couple of tricks up our sleeves," said Horvald.
"Oh, no, we haven't."
"I'll keep you posted. Stay safe out there."
"Maya out."
Horvald closed his comm. He wasn't sure who was in the worst position. Them out there, sitting among their dead and waiting to be picked off by whatever came out of the storm next. Or him, shortly to be breakfast for basilisks.
"Right. Let's see if we can shorten this trip any."
Horvald brought up the terrain scanner with a gentle tick of his right little finger. It was mostly cropped by the sandstorm, but it gave him reasonable readouts up to 100 meters ahead.
"Okay, let's run by image here,"
he said, trying to keep back the fear of the inevitable. He resettled his face, feeling the sensory mask push air bubbles out of the receptor mucus that covered the gecko's neural interface. He could direct its head and eyes from here, issue orders to attack or flee by thought alone. Horvald overlaid the terrain scanner on the gecko's optics. Using his legs and eyes, he steered the lizard along the most level course he could find, minimizing climbs up even the most gentle slopes, so long as he kept to his general heading. It made a difference, probably in the order of a meter per second, but it was nowhere near enough. The fact was, the gecko was too big and heavy compared to the basilisk, a creature that would take as direct a line as possible, feet barely kissing the sand as it ran.
"Heart of Granite Flight Command, this is Lieutenant Jorge Horvald. Please respond."
Nothing. He had no choice but to continue anyway, and pray they picked up the emergency carrier wave, if not his voice.
"We have 7 basilisks inbound as vanguard for an enemy behemoth. Repeat, a behemoth is moving towards your position, bearing 200. Do you copy?"
"Come on, come on, come on."
"Shit, this storm needs to let up."
But it wasn't letting up. If anything, it was intensifying. Despite its low profile, the gecko was being buffeted by some major gusts, and Horvald could hear the sand like hard rain on its skin. Horvald tracked the strength of the gusts for a few minutes while he moved the lizard as smoothly as he could across the shifting terrain. He tried the message another 4 times without a response. Below him, the gecko shuddered and tried to find more speed. It squawked a warning that no one but him would hear, and he already knew the enemy were closing because the radar had just come alive. Horvald's stomach knotted with fear that he immediately transmitted to the gecko, which chittered and ducked its head. He tried to force calm into his voice.
"Maya, Horvald, do you copy?"
Static hiss.
"Damn it. Well, just in case, I am 63 clicks out from the heart. No confirmed contact with flight command. I am still signalling. Enemy on my 6 at 2 clicks and closing hard. Horvald out."
Horvald tried to focus, but his breath was coming too short, and he could feel his hands shaking in the gloves, and it was making his fine control difficult.
"Come on, Jorge. You're a gecko, Doc. Get a bloody grip."
But this wasn't how it was supposed to go. Not for him. An exterminator jockey at the top of his game. If only there was a voice in his ear. But he was alone. Just him and his ride in the middle of a fucking desert in the pitch dark, eating sand and soon cooling in pools of their own blood. Horvald sighed and looked at the radar, seeing the basilisks in an arc a click from his gecko's tail and closing.
"Heart of Granite, Flight Command, this is Lieutenant Jorge Horvald. Please respond."
Guess what?
"For the final time, I'm about to be taken down by 7 MAF basilisks. This is an emergency warning. A MAF bear moth is heading your way now. You'll see it when the storm clears tomorrow. Trouble is, they'll be ready and you won't, because you didn't think anyone would be fool enough to move a bear moth in a storm. I'll take down as many of these bastards as I can before they spread my innards on the sand. Once again, you are under attack, Heart of Granite. Maya's platoon is dying out here. And now it's my turn. Horvald out."
He scanned the terrain ahead and moved on to a direct trajectory to the heart, skittering across the tops of dunes, down slopes and across scoured flat areas. The basilisks were on his tail now.
"Flightcom, Horvald, MAF behemoth moving on your position, bearing 200. Basilisk outriders on me. Maya lost."
A pair came up on his flanks. He moved the gecko's head left and right, trying to keep them off. His radar was alive with signals around him. A third darted in to nip at the right rear leg. The jaws closed briefly, and Horvald felt a sharp tug. The gecko stumbled right, sagging down into its hip. He pushed his right leg back hard, driving the gecko back to balance.
"Repeat, Flightcom Horvald. MAF behemoth moving on your position, bearing 200. Basilisk outriders on me. Maya lost."
The two flankers attacked together before Horvald had regained full speed. He felt the impact of their bodies and saw open mouths flash in, striking for his ride's neck. The gecko lunged forwards at his command, ducking low, jaws scraping the sand. Through the neural net, he felt the rake of teeth slicing into skin, as if the pain was his own. He gasped.
"Flightcom! Horvald! MAF behemoth moving on your position, bearing 200. Basilisk outriders on me. Maya lost."
Horvald swiped the tail from side to side, feeling one satisfying contact. The gecko's jaws snapped left and right too, not scoring a hit, but forcing their enemies to drop away. He had at least 4 around him now, trying to trip or bite him. He found perfect calm now the fight was on, and he was going to take at least 1 of them with him. He began to repeat his message again, but an impact high on the gecko's back shook him from his words.
"Shit!"
The basilisk, only about 1/4 the size of the gecko, dug its claws into its back and used the seats for grip to begin moving up the spine. Horvald felt horribly vulnerable, his own back exposed, the armour protecting him inadequate for an attack from above. Other basilisks drove close to box him in and stop him shaking it free. Horvald moved the gecko's head sharply right. The lizard bit out, catching a basilisk on the top of its head. Horvald ground his teeth together. He heard the enemy shriek and felt the gecko's jaws find flesh and bone beneath the skin and clamp almost shut. The satisfaction was enormous. The basilisk slewed away, and normally Horvald would have let go, but this time he needed the momentum. He clung on. He could taste the flesh and feel the blood pouring from the wound. The basilisk's legs crumpled, and it tumbled to the side. Horvald bit harder, feeling the gecko's body slewing round.
He pushed his right foot down hard, forcing the gecko to drive its right legs into the sand, and rolled, crushing the basilisk on his back beneath him.
He bounced and bumped in the moulded sheath. The gecko squealed, a wholly involuntary sound, as was the flailing of its legs and tail as it panicked in the search for balance.